Welcome to Just Relationships, the show that offers you concrete ways to make your relationships better. Whether it's your boss, your spouse, your children, or your friends, the quality of your relationships in life directly affects how you feel about yourself and the success you achieve. Your host, Dr. Duffy Spencer, a social psychologist who specializes in relationship building and the director of our own human relations consulting firm, Personal Presence, will interview top experts to help you learn to manage this essential part of your life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Duffy Spencer.
Well, greetings to you. So, you know, we're all about relationships on this show, and we want to look at how we create relationships, how we create loving, healthy, good relationships. And today we're going to talk about how to exit from a relationship in a positive and healthy way. And we're going to talk about divorce mediation and take you inside a divorce mediation session so you have a sense of what really goes on inside. And my wish is that you would learn some things about how you fight with your intimates, how you can fight more fair. Because when there are children involved, it's extraordinarily important to remain in a good relationship because you will forevermore be co-parents. And if life is willing, then you will become co-grandparents. And that's the way it works. So I have a special treat for you. I have invited Ada Havlocker back, and she is the president and owner of the Divorce and Family Mediation Center, which is located in Melville. And she's an expert in the field. She's at the point where she actually is training other people to be divorce mediators, whether they're lawyers or mental health professionals. And welcome back, Ada.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Thank you. So, Ada, we talked last time about the various things that I am in great admiration of you because I do not have a head for numbers. And even though I've always been fascinated by divorce mediation, I have been shy of it because of that numbers thing. And you not only educate your couples on getting the numbers right and then figuring out how to jive them and how to negotiate them, and they may not even have had the information that you're asking from them, and they have to somehow come up with it. And you're doing this in a highly emotionally charged atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So my hat's off to you.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow, wow, and wow.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. It's a challenge.
It's absolutely a challenge. You know, I tell my couples we're going to be spinning about five plates in the air at the same time, and we're going to try not to let any of them crash, but sometimes we got to keep one spinning while we're addressing another one, and then we kind of bring them all together and hopefully, you know, get them all to land at the same time. And it takes a little doing to get there, but we do get there.
My goodness, that's wonderful. And you had said last time that it's 4 to 6 sessions of an hour or an hour and a half usually is what it takes to get there.
Yep. Now, that's my process. There are other mediators who do 2-hour sessions, sometimes 3. They'll do kind of marathons. I find that the mediators who do that usually are not doing divorce mediation. They may be doing other types of mediation, commercial mediation or community mediation.
Uh-huh.
Because in divorce mediation, as you said before, the emotions are so high. And a lot of my couples see me in the evening. I do a lot of evening sessions. And so people are coming after work and they're tired. And, you know, an hour and a half of, you know, highly charged issues is about all they can take. And when I start to sense a little bit of fatigue, I kind of wrap things up and suggest that we pick up at another time.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I love your analogy of spinning five plates in the air.
Well, I have a few other analogies.
Yes.
Would you like to hear them?
Sure. Of course.
Well, one of them that I describe to my couples when I do the initial consultation with them, and that's when I describe the whole process and my philosophy and my approach, and I give them an idea about how long it'll take and what the fees are and answer all of their questions. I describe the mediation process as if we are putting a jigsaw puzzle together.
Mm.
So, you know, the first couple of sessions, we're going to be setting up the framework. And then we start popping the pieces of the puzzle into place.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it. I sort of have a method to my madness now. I do things in a particular kind of an order because it made sense to me when I started, and it still kind of makes sense to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a straight route. So just like with a jigsaw puzzle that has each puzzle piece has four sides to it, sometimes, you know, we've got two parts of it kind of sort of locked in, but we can't fully lock it in until the other two pieces come together.
Right.
But ultimately, we kind of pull them all together, and then the picture does start to emerge.
Mm.
So that's one analogy that I describe to them, and I promise them that there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle, but I will leave no stone unturned. I promise that everything that is important to them and that needs to be addressed will be addressed by the time we are finished with our work together.
Oh, I can just imagine how many nuances are involved, Ada.
Quite a bit. Quite a bit.
My word. Yes.
Yep.
And down to what holidays will we be seeing the children?
That's right.
And
that's
then
right.
The joint custody, and you do all that too. What kind of custody will it look like?
Yep. I describe the different types of custody arrangements in New York State just so that they understand, you know, what the terminology is and what they mean by the terminology. And then I talk about what they want to do, what's important to them. So I just, you know, we talk about residential custody and joint custody and how they're going to be sharing time with the children, making sure that the kids and they have as much access to each other as possible. And then, of course, as you just described, you know, we have to go through a holiday schedule and talk about all the big holidays and even the little ones during the course of the year. And of course, you know, we know that, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas are the two biggies and the very, very difficult, very sad.
Yes.
When we talk about those. Christmas is a little easier, believe it or not, Duffy, because there are kind of three parts to it. There's
mm-hmm.
Christmas Eve, there's Christmas morning, and there's Christmas Day. So there's a little bit more flexibility there. But Thanksgiving is that one meal holiday.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Boy,
so,
oh boy. But I wonder if couples think about that, because I know of divorced parents where it was very unfairly divided because it just wasn't expressed.
Right.
And people, you know, were really beside themselves trying to make sense of the whole thing.
I know. I've worked with Chinese couples who have holidays that were not on my sheet, but we added them. I work with Orthodox Jewish couples, and they have many, many holidays that we added to the calendar.
Mm.
So, you know, it really depends on, you know, their background and their religious upbringing and their culture, you know, which holidays are important and which ones aren't. It's just, I'm always fascinated by that process when we go through the holiday. And then we also talk about, you know, the big holiday weeks that the kids are off from school, the winter break, that, you know, Christmas, New Year break,
mm-hmm.
and then the midwinter break when the kids are off in February, and then, of course, the Easter Passover break, which they just had, and then what happens with the children when they're off from school for the whole summer? Not everybody can afford to send the kids away to camp for 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and if both parents are working and the kids are home, and they don't have enough money to even, you know, provide any kind of even day camp or something like that, that becomes a really particular challenge, talking about that. So we really go into a lot of detail.
My goodness. Again, I am just so in awe of you. And this is Dr. Duffy Spencer. We are WHPC 90.3 FM, and I am interviewing Ada Haslacher, who is the founder and owner of the Divorce and Family Mediation Center in Melville. And let me give your number, Ada.
Thank you.
In case people need you or know someone who needs you. 631-585-8210. That's 631-585. Oh, my goodness. Did I say
8210?
Yes, I said the wrong number. 5210, 585-5210. And the website is www.divorceandfamilymediationcenter.com. Okay, so yes, the weeks, the vacation weeks, the holidays, and we're going to go into some of the components, but I'm just very curious, do people seem to feel friendlier toward each other at the end of this process?
As a general rule, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. One of the most rewarding things for me is when they've completed the mediation, they are coming in to sign their agreement, and they're, you know, stay and linger and chat with me after the signatures are on the documents, and I walk them out of my office, and they hug me and thank me and tell me that they never thought that this was possible, and they are so glad that they did this in a mediation and didn't go the other route.
Yes.
I can't tell you how just I fly higher than a kite driving home that night.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention again that because we had talked about it in the last show, part one of this series, that how much more expensive lawyers are. And you had pointed out something very interesting, that lawyers are doing their roles, but the system itself is adversarial. And each lawyer is thinking only of their client and not the other. And that's a zero-sum game, win-lose game. But you are one person who has two clients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me as a marriage therapist, I tell my couples when I first meet them that neither of you is my client. Your relationship is my client.
Mm.
Yeah, and I wonder how that works with you. Is you have two individuals who have some sort of relationship. We don't know what to call it. And you're trying to help each of them feel a sense of getting fair treatment. If, as you pointed out in the last show, not perfectly what they want, but some sense of rightness about it.
True. They come, you know, couples come into me coming from all different places. When I do my initial intake on the phone and, you know, one spouse will call me, they'll say, you know, we're on the same page. We want to do this amicably. We don't want to fight with each other. We've worked a lot of things out. That's ideal. That's unusual, but ideal. Some of them are just scared out of their wits. They know this has been coming for a long time. They have no idea what the future is going to hold. They're worried about money, but they do agree on one thing, and that is that they do not want the children to suffer.
Mm.
That's a good place for them to be when they come in. Because
yes.
The rest of it, I'll help them work out as long as they both are really on the same page in terms of, you know, protecting the children as much as possible. That's always a good sign. Others come in and they're angry at each other, or one of them is really, really angry at the other one. There was some betrayal in some way, shape, or form, whether it was a financial one or another relationship. There's a lot of anger there, resentment. But they come in not even wanting to mediate, but because they don't have enough money to go to lawyers, they're coming into a mediation somewhat reluctantly. But somehow, even though they're not walking out skipping a happy dance, it's still a lot better, I know, than what would have happened had they gone the other route with lawyers, certainly from a financial standpoint.
Oh.
But as you and I discussed in the first conversation that we had, they will never be able to look at each other by the time they get finished with a litigated setting.
Yes, that's blood money, and that's so ugly, and I don't know how couples afford the rigors of divorce financially and divorce through lawyers financially and emotionally. It's extraordinary that people go through that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I don't think when they get into it that they realize what they're in for.
Yeah.
You know, they'll pay the retainer. And I'll tell you something, Duffy. This has been so interesting to me, and this has happened a number of times, where I'll get a call from somebody who tells me that they went to lawyers, and when they started to see what was what, they said, no, we don't want to do that. That's not what we want.
Mm.
We don't want to spend the money, and we don't want to destroy our family, and we know by the time we get done, it's not going to be good for us. So they stop, which is unusual. It's very hard to tell your attorney you don't want to work with them anymore.
Mm.
It takes a lot of guts to say that, you know.
Yes.
But I've had clients who've come to me after a couple of sessions or meetings with their lawyer and said, no, this is not what we want to do.
Yes, and I'm wondering, I don't know any statistics on this, but I'm guessing something like only maybe 15 to 20% of couples do mediation, and the others do regular lawyers?
You know, I really don't know what the statistics are, but I can tell you this. I started mediating in 2003, 2004. And when I started mediating, and I told people I was a divorce and family mediator, people would ask me, what is that? They never even heard of it. Now, people know what it is,
yes,
and are really opting to go that route. A lot of people find me on my website, and I ask them, how did you hear about the Divorce and Family Mediation Center? And they tell me, oh, I was online, I Googled. So they are in the privacy of their own home, checking out the world of mediation, because they do want to do things less expensively and much better for the family. So I think, and more and more people are doing mediation than ever before, and I really believe that trend will continue.
I think it has to. It's just so much more humane and rational and less expensive and less hostile, so much less hostile.
Yeah, I tell everybody that it costs you a lot less, not only financially, but emotionally.
Absolutely.
Because you know this, Duffy, the energy that it takes to stay angry is such an unbelievable emotional cost for us to hold on to that fight. And in a litigated setting, it could take 2 or 3 years to finish up. And I can't imagine going through 2 or 3 years of my life being upset like that all the time.
Oh, my word. 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Horrible. Just horrible.
Yep.
Yes. So, okay. Now, you call yourself, your center is called Divorce and Family Mediation Center rather than Divorce Mediation Center. How come you worded it that way?
Because I'm working with families.
Mm-hmm.
If I could take the word divorce out of it, I would. But I don't want to confuse the public.
Yes.
And if I just said family mediation, I think people wouldn't really know what that means. So it was important to me to keep the word family in the name.
Mm-hmm.
Because although I am helping them move toward in their separation and ultimately probably a divorce, I am working with them as a family unit. And I think it's very, very important to keep that in mind.
Yes, yes. So you had said at the end of part one that when I asked you to talk a little bit about the nature of mediation, that the first skill is listening and attentiveness and presence, giving someone your full presence and using, for you, I guess, also using your observation skills as well as the parties involved doing all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, so, okay, so what happens? They each say, what, I want this, I want that.
Well, what I do, they don't know what they want. I mean, they have a sense of what they would like to see happen ultimately, but they're not really sure even about that. So what I do is I kind of take a step-by-step approach. This is the way I conduct my mediations. Now, every mediator does things differently, but we all get to the end goal one way or the other. So what I do in my process, I first do a consultation where I meet with both of them together, and as I said before, I just want to explain the process and give them an idea of who I am, how I approach it, the work that we're going to be doing together and the fees and the timing and things like that. When they decide to get started, the first session where that I conduct, I ask them a lot of questions. And I do that for a number of reasons. Number one, I want to know, you know, what's going on in their lives. I want to know about the house, when they bought it, what they paid for it, if they had any conversation about what they would like to see happen with the house, whether it's going to be sold, if it's underwater right now because of, you know, everything that's gone on with, you know, with people's homes, if one of them is going to live there for some period of time until the children reach a certain age, and then there's either going to be a buyout or a sale. I want to know about the cars, the bank accounts, the life insurance, the car insurance, the health insurance that they have, any debts that they have, and just general questions, just to kind of get a sense of things and start to have them start to gather in their minds the information that I'm ultimately going to need from them, and then we have a discussion about what they want to see happen with all of those things. But for me, one of the most important parts of that meeting is that's when they start talking. See, the first session at the consultation, I'm doing most of the talking because I'm explaining everything to them. Mm-hmm. So I tell them the first session that I meet with them in the consultation is an information gathering session for them. The first official session where they get started with me is an information gathering session for me. And part of the information that I'm gathering, aside from asking the empirical information, is I'm really seeing what's going on with them in terms of the dynamic between them.
Mm.
Which one is talking more? Which one is talking less? Are they making eye contact with each other? Does one of them have their chair shifted away with their back toward the other spouse? Does one of them know more about the finances than the other one? Do they speak to each other with some kind of endearments? Because sometimes that does happen.
Really?
Yeah. It's Duffy, I've seen it all. Well, maybe not all, but pretty close to it. So, you know, that really kind of gives me a sense of the tone of the mediation and the way it's going to be going, whether I'm in for it with them, whether it's high conflict, there's a lot of anger, there's distrust, whatever could possibly be going on. I'm trying to read the tea leaves in that meeting.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's my first session. And then my next session, I do a budget with them. I have them fill out what I call a post-separation budget form. And I want them to start thinking about what their expenses are going to be living separately and apart and supporting their separate households. I don't want them to worry so much about where the money is coming from to do that yet, but I want them to really get a sense of what it's going to cost to live apart from each other.
And do they then notice that maybe they can't afford to live apart from each other?
Sometimes when those numbers are up on the board and then I sit down and we're just staring at the numbers on the board, sometimes it's a real eye-opener because they really had no idea.
Mm.
They knew it was going to be tight, but they didn't know that it was going to be that tight.
Mm.
Or they knew these numbers are not a surprise to them. They were prepared for it. But most times it's the first.
Yes.
Yeah.
And doesn't New York State now have a formula for the cost of a child care? Is it formulaic or does it depend upon the couple?
The child support is by statute. So there are it's the Child Support Standard Act, which was passed in 1989, and that set forth the calculation for child support. But they're guidelines, so couples can deviate from those guidelines up or down.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you can deviate from them. Of course, if you're deviating down from the guidelines, you have to really have a good reason why that's happening. And that's where, you know, the custody arrangement, sometimes they have a true 50-50 shared arrangement where they really are splitting the time with the kids, you know, pretty equally. And if they're both earning similar incomes, you know, then they'll have a conversation about whether child support even needs to be exchanged. But that's usually
right.
A rare circumstance. So there are a lot, as you said before, There are a lot of details and nuances to all of this. And so when we get to those issues around the children, the child support, paying for college, extracurricular activities, unreimbursed medical expenses for the children, child care if both parents are working, we really unbundle all of those expenses and those decisions and really talk about them.
It just sounds exhausting. I just can't get over that people who are already so down and so burnt that the marriage itself is so over that they want to separate, and now they have to somehow galvanize themselves to come up with all of this information for you and for each other and deal with all of these nuances.
Yep. But again, the beautiful part about mediation, and I tell my clients this all the time, we're not running any races. Let's take our time and think things through. We're going to go step by step. If I feel that they're getting overwhelmed with one topic, we'll move to another one. We'll come back to that other topic either later in the session or another time. Sometimes we need to bring in somebody to help. So, for example, if I'm working with a couple where the wife's been handling all the finances for the family and the husband is really, he just comes home, he brings the paycheck home, it goes into the bank, and she pays all of the bills, and she knows all the expenses for the children, and he is clueless. He doesn't know any of this.
Mm-hmm.
She's been investing the money in their 401k, the IRAs and the, you know, the 401ks or whatever, and he really doesn't know. I suggest that we bring in a financial neutral, or I can recommend a financial planner or advisor for him, because for two reasons. One, he needs to understand all of this in order to be able to make informed decisions, because I always tell my couples the most important thing that I see as my job with them is to make sure I don't have a judgment about the decisions that they make, and I'm very clear about that.
Mm.
But what I want to make sure is that they're making informed decisions. And if I sense that one of them knows more than the other one does, I want to make sure we're balancing the power in the room.
Right.
So that would be as an example of where I would suggest that he work with a financial advisor, for two reasons. One, to make sure that he understands everything that's going on right now so that he can make good decisions for himself. And more importantly, beyond that, he's going to be managing his own financial affairs, so he's going to have to balance a checkbook. He is going to be paying bills. He is going to manage his IRA portfolio. So he really needs to start feeling comfortable doing this independently, because his wife is not going to be the one who's going to be doing it for him anymore.
Yes, Ada. And on that note, we must close. And I'm glad that you mentioned that at the end of the two shows, the term balance of power, because that's what divorce mediation is all about, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Well, Ada Havelocker, I am so pleased to have you on my show again, and I know you were a while ago and a couple of years ago, and I want everyone to know again your number, which is 631-585-5210. That's 631-585-5210. And on the web, www.divorceandfamilymediationcenter.com. And Ada is in Melville. Well, thanks again, Ada.
Thank you, Duffy.
Oh, I'm so glad. And this is Dr. Duffy Spencer saying goodbye for now and wishing you great relationships.